Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for all the... I had to go splash some cold water on my face. All the nice messages people were sending about that song Richie did for me, for his grandmother. And yes, that was him playing all the instruments and singing. He put that all together in his home studio. And he will be very angry with me that I played that. But as Jake has told me many times, it's better to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission. Amen, brother. Now, as I've been staring at a picture of Nate's son getting his first haircut, because it looks like me watching the Chiefs defense and the Mizzou defense. That's me watching, like, that was me in the Tennessee game. You see, watching that, like, oh, they didn't tackle another guy. He looks how I feel watching. Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com joins us. Hello, Gabe. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Full disclosure, when Jake asked me to come on yesterday, I said, I don't like talking about football anymore.
Well.
I just don't enjoy football anymore.
Yeah, that kind of limits the possibilities of the segment, but we can...
Actually, his words were, although I hate football now, and I don't like to watch it or talk about it, yeah.
Right.
I can come on.
That's right.
How about that baseball game last night, huh, Gabe?
That was Max Scherzer, huh? Yeah. Come on.
I've also watched zero pitches of postseason baseball, so, yeah.
Max Scherzer got his first career save and set the Giants packing, so you got that going for you. Yeah. And then he made everyone mad because he was on the field celebrating in a pair of shorts and slides. But I liked it. Gabe DeArmond, so they beat North Texas. But then it appeared that many people were angry at the amount of points that North Texas scored in the second half. Should people be angry with that?
Yes.
Okay.
After two and a half quarters, I thought, all right, hey, they kind of did what they should do. And, you know, it didn't necessarily prove a ton, but at least they did what you'd like to see them do. And then, I mean, they just fell apart, you know. And I understand why Eli Drinkwitz and Steve Wilks and everybody's saying, hey, I like the competitiveness, and I saw this, and I saw that. And, you know, anytime a team has to spend a bunch of time kind of pointing out the things that were good, it means there was also a whole bunch of bad. And North Texas had scored 35 points total in three FBS games. And theoretically, against three teams that shouldn't be as good as Missouri. They scored 35 in that game alone. It looked incredibly easy. They had 491 yards. And as much as you want to say, well, it was 41-14 and the game was over, it was mostly over. But without Dawson Downing's 70-yard run at the end, like, there was a window there in a game that was 41-14 in the middle of the third quarter. And that's... you know, you can go through and say, hey, a quarter in this game and two quarters in that game and a half against SEMO, like, you can piece together one good defensive game that Missouri's played, but we're halfway through the season, and it just kind of is what it is at this point.
I know that they made a change at linebacker. So tell me about that, and also do you expect any other changes in the lineup for the game against Texas A&M? You can only do so much in season, and like you said, and we go through this with the Chiefs, if the coaches thought there was someone better, then that guy probably would have been playing by now. But what do you expect tomorrow against A&M?
Well, I don't think there are major personnel changes, because I do think the one difference in, you know, watching the Chiefs defense and watching Missouri's defense, Missouri has tried, like, they've played almost everybody except the true freshmen, and it hasn't necessarily been better, right? I think the frustration of people watching the Chiefs game is, like, hey, there's a couple guys here who I'd like to see the other guys, and we never see them. At Mizzou, you've seen them. I mean, there just aren't there aren't necessarily better options on the roster. Now, Chad Bailey did play at linebacker for Blaze Aldridge, and I thought played decently, not great, but made some plays, and you saw some things there. And I do think the concern there is they brought Blaze Aldridge in from Rice, and basically the middle linebacker job was his from day one. Now, look, I didn't see every practice. I don't know what Chad Bailey did in camp or didn't do, but the frustrating part, I think, for Missouri fans is, well, we saw this in the first four games, and then we said, where's the other guy? And then the other guy played in game five, and he might not have been perfect, but he was better. There's no doubt he was better. But other than that, I mean, if you get Darius Robinson back healthy, that might help at defensive tackle. But I don't know that there's not like somebody on the bench that you're looking at going, I really need to see that guy, and maybe he's not going to be better, but I need proof of it. I mean, we've seen most of them. You know, they're playing 20 guys a game.
Do you think it's unfair that some Mizzou fans are blaming Daniel Sorensen for the defensive woes?
I texted a couple friends earlier this week. I get text messages from people I know that like both of those teams, and I said the only way I can really tell which team they're talking about is if Daniel Sorensen is mentioned by name.
Right.
Otherwise, it could be either one of them. They look incredibly similar defensively.
Nate Buchady.
So, are we going to see the Texas A&M team that looked like garbage against teams like Colorado, or the Texas A&M team that beat Alabama?
Yeah, that's the question. I mean, if A&M comes in and plays like it did against Alabama, or plays anywhere close to its ceiling, A&M's going to win, and it's probably not going to be close. There is a reason they were ranked, whatever it was, 4th, 5th, 6th in the preseason. I mean, their ceiling, I would argue, is probably the 4th highest in the country, other than Georgia, Alabama, and Ohio State. If they play an A game, I think they might be the 4th best team in America. But they've done that exactly one time in 6 games. You know, I mean, the larger sample size is they're the team we saw against Colorado and against, you know, some of these other teams they struggled with, Mississippi State. So I don't know which team we're going to see. The pessimists will say, well, they finally figured it out, and now that's the team A&M is, and oh my God, we're in trouble. And the optimists are going to say, well, yeah, but they've played 5 other games that really give you reason to believe Missouri maybe has a shot in this game. I mean, the recipe is pretty obvious for Missouri. They have to play much better than they've been playing, and they need A&M to come in believing the press clippings and with a little bit of an Alabama hangover, which I don't think is out of the question.
All right, what do you expect to happen? What's the score going to be tomorrow in Columbia?
Yeah, I think I picked A&M 33-27. I think it's going to be closer than people think, because I do think A&M is going to have a letdown after that game. I mean, that's the game they've been pointing to for 14 months. And you know, so I think there's going to be a little bit of a hangover from that game. I think this is the game like LSU last year where Eli Drinkwitz is just calling every play he has and maybe making up some new ones on the fly, and they just – because this is Missouri's chance. It's the realistic chance that, hey, this can turn the season around. I mean, Arkansas at the end of the year, they're not beating Georgia. This is the one that you look at and say, even if it's not likely, this is our chance. So I think it's going to be closer than most people think. I just can't really get on board with Missouri actually pulling it off.
But it sounds like you don't think even – you're not a gambling man, but not the worst idea in the world for Jake to take Mizzou in the 9 points.
Oh, I would never do that.
Well, okay, then. Great. Thank you for that.
It's not the worst idea in the world, right, but it is a bad idea.
Well, he's had some bad ideas. I just wanted to try to measure it against some of the other bad ideas.
It's a bad relative,
right,
game.
Yeah, you know,
I mean,
what's bad?
On football is a bad idea in general, right?
Mm-hmm. Is it?
I don't know.
Only Jake can answer that.
I picked Ole Miss last week, and it looked real good, and then the clock operator fell asleep and left 1 second. Arkansas scored, and so Ole Miss won, but didn't really cover. Yeah. Texas just kind of decided not to tackle somebody for about 35 yards rather than just giving up a field goal that would have covered, right? You don't gamble.
Things can go sideways in a hurry on a college football Saturday. I promise you that. Gabe DeArmond, PowerMizzou.com. Thank you for your time.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Wow, that was Gabe DeArmond with lots of information there as Jake's scribbling it all down. Now let's check in on Kansas State with Matt Walters.
Kansas State!
All right, Matt, Kansas State, after the close loss to Oklahoma, they get a bye week in an effort to prepare for Iowa State in a revenge game based on what happened last year. And so what are some of the things that you hope they've accomplished in the off week besides getting healthy and getting ready for Iowa State?
Well, they've needed to build depth in a couple of spots, and we'll see if that, you know, comes to fruition or not. Do we see some different guys, a couple of young guys pop onto the field, maybe get not only some snaps, but maybe a few more snaps. K-State's a little thin at defensive end right now, but you know, I think over the 2 week period after losing to Oklahoma, part of it was to just get some guys healed up, continue to, you know, work on the ground game. K-State's going to have to be able to run it a little bit tomorrow night. And also for Skylar Thompson to, you know, continue to get that knee healed and just enhance K-State's passing game, because they're going to have some success, I think, on, you know, on both aspects, running the ball and throwing it tomorrow night if they're going to beat Iowa State.
Well, and talk about throwing the ball, 41 pass attempts from K-State against Oklahoma for 320 yards and three touchdowns. This is the same team that what threw it like 11 times in one game earlier this year. How much does that change what K-State is and can be, Skylar Thompson putting it in the air as often as he did with that much success against Oklahoma?
Well, I think K-State is a different team passing the football when Skylar's the guy that's, you know, man of the controls. And that's no offense to Will Howard or K-State's other quarterbacks, but you look black and white, and, you know, what was interesting about the Oklahoma game is that, you know, Skylar didn't take off and run, and I think that helped him in some respects in the pocket, because you could see early on, guys, how he was getting through his progression. Now, you know, obviously not every time are you going 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, there are times where that first or second option's there and he's taking it, but over the course of that Saturday, you know, he worked through his progression multiple times. He'd take that slight step left, that slight step right, step up in the pocket, and he knew he was going to get hit a couple of times, and he was fine with that. So that was one of the, you know, the best passing performances we've seen out of Skylar Thompson. And again, I think with that knee, the more it improves, we'll see him running a little bit more. He's not going to probably be the Skylar Thompson that runs it 9 or 10 times in a game. But, boy, I tell you, he opened some eyes, you're right, throwing the football in that Oklahoma game.
I know game situation dictates these decisions as well, but K-State was very aggressive going for it on fourth down 5 times against Oklahoma. And you know, you feel like you kind of have to do that to keep up with a high-powered offense like the Sooners. Here comes Iowa State. They've got a lot of offensive firepower. And we've seen this in the NFL where more teams are more willing to go for it on fourth down instead of settling for field goals or punting like they may have in past situations. Do you expect Kansas State to continue to be aggressive on fourth down against Iowa State?
I'd say the possibility is definitely there, because when you look at tomorrow night through the lens of both teams' eyes, it's kind of a must-win. If K-State doesn't come out on top, they're 0-3 in the Big 12. And Iowa State, if they don't come out on top, they're 1-2 in the Big 12, and you're in a real tough spot. K-State's got, you know, games every Saturday through the rest of the regular season, so there are no more bye weeks. And I think you have to be smart about when you go for it on fourth down. And I thought Chris Klein and Courtney Messingham, I thought they were smart, and they found good spots to do that. And I would say, at least from my personal standpoint, I think the same may hold true. You're not going to, you know, unless you're just absolutely forced to go for a 4th and 9 just to stay in the game or have a chance, you know, that's different. But like you said, the situation warrants, I won't be surprised at all tomorrow night to see K-State go for, you know, 4th down if necessary, 3, 4, maybe 5 times again.
How does K-State slow down Breece Hall?
Well, I tell you, That's the million-dollar question. And, do you stop him? No. Iowa State's able to do a lot of things. And if Kansas State can just, you know, corral him a little bit, don't let him bust the 55, 65-yard runs. You know, keep him in check. He's going to get some yards. You're not going to likely hold him to 45 or 50 yards rushing, but one, you got to tackle. Two, you got to eliminate the big play. And I think K-State's just got to, you know, I think they've got to be a great tackling team tomorrow. They missed some tackles against Oklahoma that were costly, but, you know, along with Breece Hall, I tell you, if you want to build an offense around a guy, Charlie Kohler just has always impressed me at tight end. How he got out of Oklahoma, I don't know, but Oklahoma. If you think about Iowa State guys, right quick, they've kind of been like Oklahoma, and what I mean is they haven't clicked on all cylinders yet. They're still trying to get going. They have not been a perfect football team, and you know, we'll see how both teams having a bye week, what dividends that pays tomorrow night.
And then, obviously, the turnover battle will be very important. Iowa State had, what, 4 turnovers in their loss against Iowa. Taking care of the football will be crucial in a game that you described very well. It almost feels like it's really a must-win for these teams if they want to accomplish what they set out to this season.
And think about, again, go back to Oklahoma. Not that K-State would have won the game, but if you're going to play that what-if game, what if K-State scores on that opening drive and Jim Cartier right doesn't fumble? You know, maybe the tenor and the tone of that game is slightly different. And those are the things that allow you to beat those upper echelon teams, whether you're talking about OU or an Iowa State or an Oklahoma State. And I think that's the next step for Kansas State is you've got to make those plays when they're on the silver platter for you. You have to punch it in. You've got to win games with touchdowns and not field goals in this league.
Matt, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Boys, have a great weekend.
You do the same thing. That was Matt Walters talking K-State football. Now we'll check in with John Kirby in Kansas.
Kansas!
John Kirby from JayhawkSlant.com. Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm doing well, Stephen. How you doing?
Doing very well. Nate Bucati has a very creative question to ask you. We could have some fun with Nate. Take it away.
So back when Khalil Herbert was playing at the University of Kansas, did you foresee that someday Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati would both have him starting on their fantasy football rosters in the NFL, John Kirby?
Oh, Nate, I will have to admit, I would have never thought that. I always thought he was talented, but, you know, he always kind of took the back seat to Puka Williams, you know. You always felt that Puka was the guy, you know, that would get them to where they need to be, and Khalil would be a nice fill-in back, and, boy, those roles have changed.
I'm going to need, I don't know, 20, 21, 22 touches for Khalil Herbert for the Bears on Sunday. But, honestly, because he goes to Virginia Tech, but he comes in, I think it was a six-round pick, and the Bears coaching staff have been raving about him. And then last year, in his first chance, because David Montgomery, he goes on IR. And then he splits carries with former Chief hero Damian Williams. He had 70 yards, looked really, really good, and was actually the guy in the fourth quarter that was getting the carries. And now Damian Williams goes on the COVID list, so it's going to be all Khalil Herbert on Sunday, John Kirby.
Well, hey, Steven, you know what a lot of people forget about Khalil is he exercised that four-game option the previous year before he went to Virginia Tech. After his fourth game, he basically went into the coaches and said, don't play me again. I want to use my red shirt. So he didn't play the rest of the season. So, you know, he had it mapped out pretty well what he wanted to do.
Well, hey, speaking of, and that was during the David Beatty era, there was, to me, an incredibly embarrassing chapter of KU football. Hopefully came to a close yesterday. David Beatty and his lawyer did a press conference where they announced that he's been cleared of wrongdoing from the NCAA and can return to coaching. Well, the results weren't there when David Beatty was a coach. We could get into all the reasons why or why not. But I think everybody around there, to me, always felt like David Beatty was a good guy. His heart was in the right place. And the way that that last administration did him dirty, to me, was an embarrassment to the school, JK. How good is it to just kind of have – is that put to bed now? Can we all move on from that now and wish David Beatty the best?
Absolutely. You know, he did nothing but, you know, do what he was supposed to do, except for the winning part, right? But David Beatty always handled his business well. I got to know him, you know, back when he came in with Mangino in 2008, and I've known him for a long time, and he always represented himself well and did everything that was right. And David's a good guy. He really is. So, yeah, you know, it's one of those things. I saw a post on our message board that said, well, since he never won, maybe they shouldn't have paid him. And I'm like, you know, that's not how it works.
Nope.
You know, I mean, when you get the contract, you know, as long as you do what you're supposed to do and there's no, you know, funny business behind the scenes, you get paid. And that's probably what should have happened. And it would have saved themselves a lot of, you know, spotlight on the school and the football program if they would have just paid him and moved on down the road. They wouldn't have had to deal with any of this.
Yeah, they'd have been better off if they had just kept him instead of going with Les Miles anyway. So we can move on from that. And it's clear with guys like Khalil Herbert, David Beatty actually brought some decent talent into Lawrence, you know, while he was there. But now we're on to this weekend after a bye weekend against Texas Tech. And I was thinking about this, JK. Bye weeks are always good for teams because you get all that time to work on things. Maybe, is it possible that this bye week was even more important for Lance Leipold's staff, considering what little time they had in the offseason to actually work with this group of guys?
Yeah, you know, Nate, when I was around the players and the coach, you know, this week, they almost used it like an extension of fall camp. And it's kind of scary. It kind of puts it in perspective. You know, Leipold was hired on the last day of April. So he really had May was his beginning. When he met with the players in May, think about this, Nate, he met with each player like 15, 30 minutes. Then they did finals, and they went home. They didn't come back to Lawrence until the first week of June to start working out with the strength coach. So the strength coach got them for 2 months, then they started fall camp. So when you look at this, Leipold and his staff had 4 weeks of practice with the players before they ever got to play a first game. So they're even using like this bye week, open week, as an extension of fall camp just to get some things in and go back to some basics that they maybe never had a chance to cover or just try to enhance on.
So I love this from Leipold. You want to talk, Stephen, about glass half full or finding the silver lining in something? He was asked what areas they were supposed to improve it or what they wanted to really focus on improving in. And he basically said, we need to improve at everything because we're not very good at anything yet. And he said, there's plenty of room for improvement to go around, and that can help during these types of times because you can speak candidly, and everybody's got to own it in the locker room, which keeps the locker room together. Basically, if you're bad at everything, then there's no finger pointing. So I thought that was a pretty good positive spin on the whole situation, John. But I'm curious, there's got to be a couple things in particular that you're looking to see this team improve upon when they play the game tomorrow. Is there anything in specific that you're looking at them to try to take a step forward in?
Yeah, Nate, you know, there's a couple things. Number one, I want to see if the offensive line can keep doing what they're doing because, you know, they gave up 6 sacks against Coastal Carolina. And in the last 3 games, they've only given up 1 sack. So, to me, that's a lot of improvement right there. So I want to see if that offensive line can keep that up. But I think the biggest improvements that I want to see probably are on the defensive side of the ball. Now, you know, they're just undermanned in some spots, okay? I mean, you know, they're playing Caleb Taylor at defensive tackle right now. You know, he's 260 pounds, and he's going up against guys that are 300 and 310 on the other side. And, you know, he's giving up 40, 50 pounds in some spots. And they've got to start figuring out a way to wrap up and tackle. There's been a lot of missed tackles. But, you know, they're playing with a lot of effort. So if they can find a way to just start limiting some plays and give the offense a little bit of a break, you know, I think you'll keep seeing some strides because I have seen some strides in areas.
All right, John Kirby is our guest. And Texas Tech, of course, is a matchup. Look, they've had some stinkers out there. They gave up 70 points to Texas. Last week, their last game, they lost 52-31 to TCU. They did win at West Virginia by 3. But what is Texas Tech, and are they vulnerable? Can Kansas compete with Texas Tech?
Yeah, Stephen, I think they can. I talked to Aaron Dickens, who's part of our Rivals Network. He helps run our Texas Tech site. You know, it's interesting. He told me he thinks Wells is in trouble down there. And he said 6 wins may not even save the job. So, you know, there's some things that are going on around the program there. I mean, I think they're starting to feel the pressure right now. There was pressure on them at the end of last season. Texas Tech can score. They're talented. They got Sir Roderick Thomas back, their running back, who's led them in rushing the last 2 years. He came back healthy last week. He's going to be a load to stop for Kansas. But I think Kansas can compete in this thing. You know, I mean, Texas Tech is, you know, they're really inconsistent. Like you said, I watched them against West Virginia. They looked really good that day. Then you watch them against TCU, and they look really bad that day. So it's going to depend a little bit on what Texas Tech team shows up. But I really think the Jayhawks can hang in this thing.
What's the score going to be?
You know, Stephen, I think Kansas is going to come out and play well. I really do. I think talking to the guys, they say they're fresh. They say they got a lot accomplished in the bye week. They've had a really good week of practice. Texas Tech hasn't had a bye yet. Theirs doesn't come till later in the season. But I still think Texas Tech has enough offense. I'm going to go Texas Tech 31, Kansas 24.
John Kirby, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
Thank you to Gabe DeArmond, Matt Walters, and John Kirby. That is your Border Patrol Blitz. When we come back, Mike McFarland will give his thoughts on check swings on Sports Radio 810 WHB.